I'm going to do this in a teaching mode, I think. You know how that is. We make plans and the plans are changed. It's good to be here. I especially like speaking in the morning. It seems as though my mind is better. I must be a morning person. Let me begin telling you a story. There's a story of a young man who, walking down the street, walked up upon a shop called the Truth Shop. And he walked in and he said to the clerk, "I'd like to purchase the truth." And the clerk said, "Do you want the whole truth or partial truth?" And he said, "I want the whole truth." He said, "Well, you need to go over to the other counter." He walked over to the next counter and he said, "I've come to purchase the whole truth." And the gentleman said, "Well, it's very expensive." He said, "Well, how much is it?" He says, "It'll cost you your unquestioned beliefs." I came to a place in my life where I found that I didn't have my own faith. I had gotten my faith from my mother or my father. And I knew that I needed to have the faith of Jesus. I needed David's faith. So, with the theme that we have today, "Blow the Trumpet in Zion," I'd like you to think of you as being the trumpet. And let's let His breath form the tune of our life. Can you imagine if you went to play an instrument that had a reed and the reed was split? It doesn't make a very good tune, does it? Or if you had an instrument, a trumpet that was made of wood instead of fine metal. So I'd like you to look at yourself as we proceed as being the trumpet or the reed. And we would like to become refined so we would make the best trumpet. All religion comes from a question. And the question is this: what kind of God is God if He exists? And what does He require of me, if anything? From the beginning of time, all forms of religion that we have are trying to answer that question. What kind of God is God, and what does He require of me? What does He require of my time? There are basically three ways that man answers the question. I would like to talk to you for a moment about those three ways. Please don't think that I'm talking against any of these ways. All we're trying to do is to understand ways that this question is answered. The first way that I'd like to talk about is that man answers the question of what kind of God is God if He exists, and what does He require of me, if anything, in a liturgical fashion. Liturgical faith says truth is meant to be worshiped. Truth is something that you bow down to. Some of us may think that we have the only liturgy in the world, but liturgical faith is as old as man. Let me give you another example of liturgical faith. Liturgy is simply how we come together as a group to worship. Pagans would do it like this, some pagans. They would take a virgin up on a mountain and they would gather and they'd tie her to a stake, put branches around her, set them on fire, burn her up, and they were answering the question of what God required of them. He requires that we burn a clean woman so that the soil will produce so that our animals will produce, and so that we people will reproduce. That's liturgy. You and I understand liturgy in a different fashion. The thing that I'd like you to understand from liturgical worship or faith, liturgical faith, is that liturgical faith says truth is meant to be worshiped. The second way that man answers the question of what kind of God is God and what he requires of us is in a conceptual fashion or with a concept. Conceptual faith says truth is meant to be known. It is an assent with our intellect to certain doctrine and dogmas. Truth is meant to be known. It's a concept. When we say our creed, we are giving our basic concept. The third way that I'd like to talk about is called incarnational faith. Incarnational faith says it is not enough to worship the truth. It is not enough to know the truth, but truth is meant to be lived. Truth must be incarnated in us. The greatest heresy in Christianity is to worship the truth, to know the truth, and refuse to live the truth. If liturgical faith and conceptual faith is not supportive of incarnational faith, then they become nothing but rank magic. Matter of fact, Paul would say that liturgical faith could lead to damnation if it wasn't bringing about the incarnation of God within us. Let you and I answer the question, and I'd like you all to answer the question, because you and I have something specific to say about what kind of God God is and what he requires of me. Because you and I believe that God became a who. God became a person that we could put our hands on. So let you and I answer the question, and I'm going to ask it a little differently, and I would like you to answer the question. Who is God? God became a who? Who is God? Jesus. Boy, we got a little teeny one out there. Let's do it again. Who is God?
Jesus.
Let's do it again. Who is God?
Jesus.
All right, you and I see have a specific answer of what kind of God God is, don't we? He was revealed to us in the person of Jesus. I'm going to ask the question one more time, and let's see if we got more Christians in here than that. Who is God?
Jesus.
The second question is, what does he require of us, if anything? How? How do we love? But he gave us a unique command. Love one another as I have loved you. Jesus is the standard for what it is to love. Okay? So you and I as Christians answer the question. We say, Christianity says that Jesus is God, and he requires that we love the way he loved. That's kind of simple, isn't it? And it really is that simple. There's a lot of things that we're doing that really aren't required. And please don't anybody in here walk out of here thinking I'm talking about against liturgical faith or conceptual faith. I'm trying to get our priorities in order. People that choose to be Christian, if you're not careful, you'll have your mama's faith or your daddy's faith. That's what most of us have, isn't it? If mom and daddy had been Hindus, we'd be, wouldn't we? Yeah. Oh, we don't like it. Think about it. See, we need to make some decisions about what kind of faith we're going to have. The better the quality of our trumpet, the better the music will be. Good faith produces good music. What is love? Most of us think of love as an emotion. Yes. My microphone didn't work. Hello. All right. Most of us think is our emotions as the love of God. You know, I feel like loving you, I do. I don't feel like loving you, I don't. But that's erroneous. Matter of fact, animals love like that. Animals have emotions. Some of you have animals that love you, don't you? But if you stop feeding them and the next door neighbor begins to feed them, who do they love then? The next door neighbor. That's kind of the way we are, isn't it? When your wife quits pleasing you, what do? Go someplace else. You understand? Or if the kids stop pleasing you, what do? Kick them out. You understand? That's certainly not the way Jesus loved, is it? The love that I'm talking about is an act of the will. It's a choice. I'm going to read you a quote and listen to it. The world is caught up in its own activity. Only when actions are performed as worship of God do they have value. Every action must be performed sacramentally and must be free from all attachment to results. The only action with any value is one of holy love. I'm going to give you a negative way, I think, to understand love. I'm going to tell you what love isn't. And if you can remember this, I think it can be a guide in your life. Any action that is done for a reward has no value. Any action that is done to get a result has no value. Isn't that an awesome thought? We all work for a reward. We treat our kids a certain way and expect them to return the act. We do the same with our wives and our husbands. And I'm saying to you that any act that is done expecting a reward has no lasting value. I wonder if Jesus would have talked like that. Action that has value must be a sacrifice. Let me read you a statement here from the document that Charlie started with last night. He read this statement. If they are consecrated, a kingly priesthood and a holy nation, it is in order that they may in all their actions offer spiritual sacrifices and bear witness to Christ all the world over. Spiritual sacrifices. Let me give you an idea of what that is. When you love your enemy, that is a spiritual sacrifice. Listen to Jesus say it. And I'm not going to quote him perfectly. You'll know the scriptures. If you lend to somebody expecting a return, what good is there in that? See, if you lend expecting to get something back, the action is absolutely useless in the world. Oh my. We always expect something, don't we? Let me ask you this question. If I was running for political office and I offered you $100 to vote for me, what would we call that? Bribery. Well, if Jesus told you if you did certain acts, you'd get heaven, what is that? Oh my. Do we believe God's into the business of bribery? See, Jesus said the kingdom of God was at hand. It's now, folks. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Most of us are doing this to get something later. And when you do, it has no value. The value must lie in the action, and that's the love of God. No reward at all is necessary. If you feed those, who should you feed? What are the words of Jesus? When you go to feed somebody, who do you feed? If you're going to take somebody home to eat, you take those that cannot repay you. Isn't that an interesting thing that Jesus talked like that? If you love those, who's going to return your love? What good is there in that? Everybody does that. Isn't that interesting? Most Christians I know today, everything they're doing is to get something back. That's what the world teaches us, folks. All of Jesus' words were just the opposite. That's why they're so hard to us. Love your enemy. What's your reward for that? They'll kill you. Somebody robs you, you let them have it. It won't stop them from robbing you. They'll rob you again. What's your reward for that? See, this is why we have a problem with this message. You understand? Have we ever heard of that, Catholics? Actual grace? Do you know when somebody slaps you and you turn your cheek, that's actual grace? Do you know when somebody robs you and you let them have it, that's actual grace? Maybe we don't, though. Who in here could tell me what grace is? Somebody in the front said unmerited favor. It's a free gift, one you could never deserve, right? You couldn't earn the gift. Well, if somebody slaps you and you don't slap them back, it's unmerited favor. And if you and I have received the unmerited favor of God, how could we not live graciously with others? Isn't that an interesting thought? I'll read you another statement from the document on evangelization in the modern world. And this is under A Living Preaching. This is the title, A Living Preaching. Preaching the verbal proclamation of a message is indeed always indispensable. We are well aware that modern man is sated by talk. He is obviously often tired of listening and, what is worse, impervious to words. We are also aware that many psychologists and sociologists express the view that the modern man has passed beyond the civilization of the word, which is now ineffective and useless, and that today he lives in the civilization of the image. That's what's important as I talk about doing this sacramentally, because sacraments are signs. We understand that, don't we? We Catholics understand that. So I want to talk to you just a little bit about you living a sacramental life, a life that becomes a sign to the world of God's holy love. Let me give you some signs of grace. Jesus was such a sign. Mary was such a sign. The love of our enemy is such a sign. The turning of the cheek is such a sign. Learning to live on less than your ability to make and giving the remainder of time to others that need it is such a sign. That's un-American, though, isn't it? How many of us has learned to live on less than our ability to make? Or are we in hock up to our ears? We're living on more than our ability to make. That's what we're taught in the world. It makes it very difficult to live the life that I'm talking about if you're in hock up to your ears. Because then you become a slave to who? Caesar! Tell you another story. Two guys sit down to eat. They broke open their lunch pail. One guy lays out a big tablecloth and lobster and all of the fine things of the world on it, and he starts eating. The other guy opens his little pail, and on his lap he places a bowl of rice. And the guy that's eating the lobster says, "Man, if you'd learned to be subservient to the king, you could eat like this." And the other man said, "If you learned to eat rice, you wouldn't have to serve the king." Choosing celibacy is such a sign. And it's got to be a choice, folks. Can't be coerced into it. Choosing union with one spouse is such a sign. The willingness to suffer without the desire to retaliate is such a sign. These are sacramental actions. But if you receive the sacraments passively and your life doesn't become a sacramental action, then they are absolutely useless. The willingness to serve without the desire of a return. You notice there's nothing, you're doing something expecting nothing back, is such a sign. Honoring your mother and your father, children, is such a sign. It's a sign of God's holy love. I'm sure mom and daddy doesn't deserve your honor. Now you mom and daddies don't get mad at me. I know you. I'm one of you.